You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit c8neighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.
Hi, we're Chris DeRosa
and Dominic Pupa from Fixing Famous People.
And Katie and Nathan wanted us to let you know that they use strong language in this show.
So if that's not your thing, this isn't the show for you. But if you like Queen's podcast, then you'll love Fixing Famous People.
It's the podcast where we, two veteran reality television producers, unpack the biggest celebrity scandals dominating entertainment news
and our lives. Every week, we attempt to fix a new celebrity client by analyzing their missteps and each pitching a solution to return them to glory.
You can find Fixing Famous People literally anywhere you find podcasts.
Hi, this is Katie.
And this is Nathan.
And you're listening to Queen's Podcast, the show about badass women in history. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, Katie. I am so excited about what we're about to do next.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So we're going to get into Catherine Howard Part 3. Nathan and I have already discussed that we might cry, and we're just going to have to accept it. We might cry.
Yes. So welcome on this journey with us.
Spoiler alert. But before we get started, we actually have a really fun thing to do first. Over on Patreon, for our top tier Queen Mothers supporters, we are going to let them choose a couple of the queens that we're going to cover this month. And so I said, hey, if you're interested in participating, let us know. And we're going to put your name in a drawing. And we're about to draw the person who is going to pick a queen or two for season 7. So
I cannot wait.
I think this is so fun. I don't know why we've never done this before. I'm really excited. So Nathan, we had 16 people say that they would like to participate. And I have a spreadsheet here with 16 names on it. Would you ask Siri to pick a number between 1 and 16?
Yes, I will. Gladly. Ooh. Hey Siri, pick a number between 1 and 16. She picked 4.
4. All right, we got Maggie. All right, Maggie, we will be sliding into your DMs over on Patreon soon, and I can't wait to see. I can't wait to hear who Maggie picks. I'm excited. So, Nathan, why don't you tell us where we last left Kay Howard?
So, she's the Queen of England, and she's kind of crushing it. She's not trying to get, like, overly involved in politics, but she's still played her role in getting Thomas Wyatt out of prison, which made her very, very popular.
Yes. But she's married to a man who's twice her age. And he doesn't always have the energy to keep up with her. Because he's also, I mean, he's twice her age, but he's also, he hasn't really taken care of himself, you know? Mm-hmm. He gets tired a lot, so sometimes she is left on her own quite often to host parties and social events. And because of that, her new best friend, her new BFF, Lady Rochford, aka Jane Boleyn, has helped her start up a bit of a flirtation with her ex-boyfriend, Thomas Culpepper.
Yeah, if you'll remember Thomas Culpepper, he's the one that, like, broke her heart previously. Mm. And you can also remember her other ex-boyfriend, Francis Durham. He managed to weasel his way into a job at court as well.
He's so, probably up, you know, there sleeping, like, with all the milkmaids. Yeah.
One honey.
So, yeah, when we last left Catherine, it was the spring. It was right around Easter. Remember they had to cancel, like, the Mardi Gras party and everything?
Oh, yeah.
But it seems like the illness that Henry VIII was suffering from, he's pretty much recovered from at this point. So that's great. But he's still laying a little bit lower than usual. So Catherine, kind of unsupervised, has time to have this. She got a little bit loose with her flirtation with Thomas Culpepper.
And they didn't do anything at this time because that would have been, like, major red flags, right. Major eyebrows. But back then, flirting was just kind of a part of royal court. Yeah. And I think she let herself get a little too attached again.
Yeah.
And like we said in the last episode, something about sleeping with old, sick men makes your ex look really fucking hot.
And it was around this time, Thomas Culpepper got sick. And we have no idea from what, but Catherine wrote him a letter. And it's the only letter written in her hand that survives to this day.
And we've talked about this on the show, how back in the day, people would often write it to each other in overly flowery language. So the modern day reader might think it seems a little bit romantic, but to them, that was just the style. But this letter is different. Mm-hmm. You would write to your sibling or your mother or your childhood best friend like that, but not some guy that works for your husband.
Yeah. So you know what? We haven't done this part. We haven't done this segment in a while that we call Queen's Podcast Theater.
Queen's Podcast Theater.
Acting. We're going to have Nathan do a dramatic reading of a few of the parts from this letter. It's not the letter in full because. And you let us know what you think. So Nathan, take it away.
Master Culpepper, send me word how that you do, for I never long so much for a thing as I do to see you and to speak with you.
Okay, that's not too incriminating. It's pretty flirty, but like we said, flirtation was a part of court life. And when your friend's been sick and you want to know how they're doing, and even having a cold back then was scary, so.
It makes my heart die to think what fortune I have that I cannot be always in your company.
Okay, it makes my heart die. That she is his employer, basically. That's kind of intense. Okay.
Trusting to see you shortly again. And I would you was with me now that you might see what pain I take in writing to you. Yours as long as life endures, Catherine.
As long as life endures. That's the kind of the part that makes me go, huh. what do you think?
Yeah, right. A little bit. Okay, we're going from flirt zone to bone zone.
Yes.
In just like 2 seconds flat. It's literally like in the same letter. Oh, she's a little flirty. Oh, this is intense.
Yes. I mean, this to me sounds like, and I'm trying to look at it through their contemporary lens, not a modern day lens, but it seems to me like she is emotionally attached to this person. What do you think?
Yeah, it starts off innocent, but it gets more and more attached. So it seems like there's something more going on with this guy who just randomly works for your husband.
Right. It's more than a friendship is what it feels like.
Yeah.
If Thomas wrote back, we don't know. I think it is an interesting aspect that he kept the letter. So, because if it was, they were in a romantic relationship, it could be super incriminating if he found it. And as we know, Henry VIII is in his head chop era, you know.
Chop, chop, chop.
Chop, chop. If he didn't destroy it, is it because he was love struck as well? Is it because it was innocent and, hey, you keep a letter if a queen writes you a letter? Or some people believe it might also be for like blackmail purposes. What do you think?
I honestly think it could be a mixture between like love struck and blackmail.
Yeah.
Like, oh, because, you know, there's people that are like so love struck that they're like, if you do this and you leave me, then I'm going to bring this up.
Everybody. But yeah.
Yeah. But I think there has to be some like to keep that meant that he had some emotional attachment to it.
Something that I learned while doing this research. Thomas Culpepper lost both of his parents the same year. So it could also be that he's feeling he was just overly sentimental at this point in his life as well. I don't know. We'll never know.
Huh.
We'll never fucking know, but it's fun to speculate.
But what we do know is that things get messy. This is probably going to be like the messiest Messerson episode that we've ever done.
Except for the Messalina episode. Messalina was somehow the messiest, but this is definitely...
It was in her name.
Yeah.
It was in her namesake. She was destined to be messy. But Catherine is right up next to her with this shit. So spoiler alert.
Okay. You know what? Before we get into the mess, let's go ahead and top off our drinks. Hear a word from our sponsors so we can mentally prepare ourselves.
Oh gosh, thank you.
Hey
guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places. Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
And we're back. Ooh. Nathan, what are you drinking today? We didn't talk about that up at the top. What are you drinking?
I have some Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand that I'm going to crack open a little bit.
How
later,
did you get? Why do you have New Zealand wine?
I didn't go to New Zealand. I just went to Utah and got COVID.
We've both had the plague this year. Look at us. Look at us being so serious about history.
Yay. Speaking of road trips.
Anyway.
We're going to go on a road trip, Tudor fashion.
Yes.
So, it's the summer of 1541. The Tudor court was going to go on progress to the north of England. And this is like the first time ever during Henry VIII's reign. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And we've talked about royal progress on this show before. The royal family will all get in their carriages, get on their horses, and go visit other parts of England that they don't live in. It gives the people a chance to see them and show representation. And it's just a thing that kings and queens do so that people know who they are, basically.
And it's a big fucking deal for a few reasons. So for Catherine, it was huge because she's never traveled before anywhere, really, because she's really only lived in London and surrounding areas. So this is her first time to experience the world, quote unquote. Like, she's just literally going around the country. But for me, it's like, if I go to Mexico, I'm like, whoa. Like, imagine that feeling for her. It's, oh my gosh, there's a big world around me that I never knew about.
She's never, she's never going anywhere.
She's meeting new people. Yeah, she's meeting new people. She's going new places. She gets a whole new wardrobe.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
But besides Catherine, it was also just a big deal for the country. We've talked about on this show before the Pilgrimage of Grace. I think we did a Patreon episode about it. Mm-hmm. But Nathan, give us a TLDR on the Pilgrimage of Grace for anyone that doesn't know.
Okay, so Henry VIII, like, travels around the country, and he's like, hey, bro, those Catholics are real crazy with their bread and wine. They think it's the body and blood of Christ. That's crazy.
They won't let me divorce my first wife either.
Yeah, we're not into that either. So let's close down all the monasteries. And the people in the northern part of England said, the fuck we are. And they did this whole revolution about it called the Pilgrimage of Grace. Hence why I'm going down this rabbit hole. And it went very poorly for them. And ever since, Henry was looked at the people in the north with a little bit of suspicion.
Yeah.
You're suspicious.
I think also there's a bit of a Game of Thrones tie in there. I think the reason that, because we know George R.R. Martin pulls from real history. So I think that's a reason why it's always been like in Game of Thrones that the North was like a little bit different because of the divide in the country. Anyway, reel it in, Katie. So
every time Game of Thrones somehow makes it into an episode, like, it makes me think that maybe one day we can just do a Patreon series on how certain events in Game of Thrones were inspired by historical events.
Why haven't
Katie's? If you could see Katie's.
Why haven't we? We've done like one or two episodes that kind of about like Game of Thrones. Why don't we just? Okay, let's circle back to this later. Anyway. But no. So yeah, ever since, that was like maybe 5 or 6 years prior. But ever since, Henry VIII has been looking at the North like really like suspiciously. Like,
what you doing?
What the fuck are y'all
what
up
you doing
to?
Over
yes.
there?
Yes. And so the fact that he was now specifically going to the North on Progress, it served two purposes. It was a bit of an olive branch from the royal family. Mm. We're getting over it. We're forgiving you. But it was also a chance for the people in the North to seriously kiss Henry's ass, which he was a fan of. Like he.
Oh, you mean that. Our dear narcissist doesn't love a good ass kissing.
Mm.
And on June 30th, the whole damn court loads up and sets off. So how do we think Catherine felt about this? Because, you know, they're going on the road, which sounds fun, but it's for 4 months.
4 months. And like they didn't have. Travel back then was not something that was like easy to do. You know, if you're on a road trip now for 4 months, you're probably in like a, you know, a camper, an RV or something. This is different. I bet she had like a mix of emotions, you know, excited to see the world or other parts of England. But because Henry VIII, I don't think had ever even been to the North either, which also is annoying because he's been to France, but he's never been to parts of his own country.
God, go figure. France and England always, always watching each other.
Yeah. They love, the kings of France and England love waving their dicks at each other. Anyway, nope. Nathan, what would have been like expected of Catherine on this trip?
Lots of schmoozing mm-hmm. with lords and foreign diplomats. And we already know that Catherine plays the part of this pious, dutiful queen. She's like Catherine of Aragon's knockoff. So I don't think she was too stressed about the situation.
No, I think she was probably more excited than anything. So mm-hmm. now we know what she'll be doing. She'll be schmoozing. She'll be visiting diplomats. She'll be rubbing elbows. She'll be making public appearances. Cool. Got it under wrap. Who all goes on Royal Progress?
Oh, so literally everyone? Except a few people, but namely her stepdaughter, Proud Mary. She wouldn't have been excited about that.
I imagine they kept their distance from each other.
Yeah, but all of her ladies-in-waiting would have gone with her, so that's another nice. Thing. And it's not believed that her ex, Francis Durham, the dumbass, he didn't go on Progress with her. But her other ex, Thomas mm-hmm. Culpepper, definitely did, since he was one of Henry's favorite courtiers because he was handsome and funny. Like, oh my god, you remind me so much of myself. Oh,
I was like, all right, even like 20 years ago? All right, buddy.
All right, little buddy.
All right, little buddy. So, unsurprisingly, because everything we've learned about Catherine is she was a fucking hit on Progress. Knocked it out of the court. 10 out of 10. No notes. She's beautiful. She's dutiful. The people love her. She and Henry got these outfits that they would wear to a lot of the really important events. And Henry was from head to toe in gold. And she was from head to toe in silver.
Ooh.
And ooh. I know. And everyone was just like, good God, she's beautiful. And I think Henry maybe even got a little bit jealous, being like, no one's saying I look beautiful. But
that's because you're not stanky leg. Go home.
But I bet he, like, even though maybe he wouldn't have been, like, considered beautiful, I bet he was still, like, really striking looking, head to toe in gold.
Yes, yes, yes. And why does the man in gold and the woman's in silver? Gold is first place, silver
is
second place.
Oh, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. But I bet everybody was just like, good God, this woman is beautiful. And she was just like, little old man. Yeah.
She was one of those people that was like, I know.
I know. Well, I mean, how could she not? Beautiful people know they're beautiful because people have been telling her she's beautiful since she was a child, you know? So, yeah. But anyway, that was a complete sidetrack. The people loved her. She was beautiful. She was dutiful.
Beautiful and dutiful.
Beautiful and dutiful. But it was a lot of traveling, which even by modern day standards, taking a 10-hour flight is exhausting. They're making every day, every third day or something, 5-hour trips via horse and buggy. So the king, after traveling and after having public engagements all day, he's fucking tired. And can you blame him?
Yeah, he's getting up there in age, especially for 1541 standards. Yeah. His stanky leg isn't doing any better, so it's constantly hurting him. He's grumpy AF. After their official duties, he'd go to bed and she'd be left on her own for the rest of the night.
The court didn't go to bed just because the king went to bed. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
When the cat's away,
the mice are up there. Yeah. I tried.
I think Henry knew they were all staying up and partying, and he was just like, I can't. Which, also relatable. When he would go to bed early, it would kind of be up to Catherine to kind of be the hostess. Because we have all these people that are expecting somebody from the royal family to mm-hmm. be there. And it seems like pretty early on in the summer of this progress in 1541, Catherine said to her ride or die, Jane Boleyn, I want to talk to Thomas Culpepper alone. I want a meeting with him alone. Can you make that happen?
And it seems like they tried to make this meeting happen a few times, but y'all, you have to be fucking careful because this is Tudor court and gossip is currency. Yes.
Literally.
People have their eyes and ears open because that's going to advance their position at court mm-hmm. if they have the hottest gossip. In fact, there's a story of Lady Rochford scolding Catherine, being like, you have to be more careful. Because she ended up sending a letter that was unsealed through a messenger, which no one thought much of it, but until later, don't Google it.
Again, like we've talked about so many times in this series, she just wasn't schooled. Do you think Anne Boleyn, do you think Catherine of Aragon would have ever sent a letter unsealed?
Oh, fuck no. Fuck no.
She just was never, she didn't have the right education for the job she got. Ugh,
no.
Bless her. So finally, one day, they've been trying to make this secret meeting happen for a while. One day they end up at these lodgings while they're in progress. Because what would happen is when you're on royal progress, people with castles basically like kick their entire family out so the king and queen and their hundreds of people can come stay with them. So one day they end up at a lodging where Jane Boleyn, Lady Rochford, has her own room. So we don't really have time to go into the hierarchy of ladies in waiting. But since Jane Boleyn, because Jane Boleyn was like 36 at this point, Catherine Howard is like maybe 18, 19-ish. So all her ladies in waiting were kind of the same age. So because she was a little bit older and because she was a widow, she'd been married before, she's just a little bit higher in the ranks. So if there was a room, like if there happened to be an extra room connected to the queen's lodgings, it would go to the most senior lady in waiting, which was Jane Boleyn. And she had a back door to her room. She had, It was a back door with a staircase that was secret that someone could enter from without everyone in court knowing.
So Thomas Culpepper entered her back door stairway to heaven.
And he's climbing a stairway to heaven.
So here comes Thomas Culpepper, and the story as we know it is that basically Jane gave them the room and slept in the hallway. Mm-hmm. So both Catherine and Thomas swear that they had stayed up talking mm-hmm. until the sun came up. okay, I just can't. But Jane said she never asked what happened, but she just kind of assumed that they had sex at night, because I would too.
Let's discuss this. Let's dissect this. Because on one hand, okay. I don't know about you, but for me, like when me and my husband first met, we would stay up all night talking. So I believe mm-hmm. that, I mean, what do you think? Have you ever just like, stayed up all night talking and nothing?
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No. That's common because you're like getting to know you.
Yeah.
Getting to know all about you. That whole thing.
Yeah, sure. And just when you're so in love with somebody in those early stages, it's, I want to know your favorite color. I want to know your favorite song. I want to, you know, and so I don't disbelieve that they could have stayed up all night just talking. Also, her and Jane Boleyn were so close. They were thick as fucking thieves. Wouldn't she have told?
She would have known.
Yeah. Wouldn't she?
Yeah. Also, like, from Catherine Howard's perspective, you just saw Anne Boleyn get her head chopped off.
Her first cousin.
For cheating.
Not even.
Yeah.
No one actually believed that Anne Boleyn cheated, though. But
no. But I mean, still, that was the narrative. So if you were to cheat on the king, you're going to get killed. So that also is in Catherine Howard's corner. Yeah. She would have known that if word would have gotten out, she would have been killed immediately. So I think she may have taken it a little more cautiously. And sure, did they make out and maybe have a handy here or there? Possibly. But was there anything like sexual intercourse?
So
no,
what
I don't know.
And I don't know. I go back and forth. I flip back and forth on, did Catherine Howard actually have sex with Thomas Culpepper conversation? I think that they discussed, okay, you're a teenager. The king is in his 50s. You're obviously going to outlive the king. I think they discussed, what are we going to do after the king dies? I think that's what they discussed.
Yes, and that's fair. That's totally fair.
But if you'll remember from the Anne Boleyn episode, in the whole Anne Boleyn thing, she said to this other guy being like, I think you plan to fill dead men's shoes, which means I think you're trying to make a move on me after the king dies. And that was incriminating because to even mention the death of the king was treason. Okay, so we're not going to solve it, but I just think that's something we should remember for later on.
Yeah. So either way, there were several times during this progress where they got to have all these nighttime meetups, and one of them was in Catherine's personal toilet area, basically, which isn't quite what we think of as a bathroom, but still, it's not super romantic.
Her bathroom is like the size of a studio apartment, and then it's got like the toilet in the separate area. That's kind of like what this is that like it's her quote-unquote toilet, because the toilet is in there, but it's also got plenty of other space. So they're not maybe hooking up on a toilet. But anyway, no, this is important to mention, though, because do you remember we talked about... Are you okay?
I'm just thinking that Catherine Howard has, in that area, it's like, for a good time, call Catherine.
Like on a bathroom stall.
Yes, absolutely. She has to.
This is important to note because, do you remember last episode we talked about her lady-in-waiting from when she was with the Dowager Duchess Joan Ackworth? Like, she had hired her.
Yes.
Joan, I guess at one point, Catherine was like, I'm going to the bathroom. And Joan was like, oh, let me come assist you. Because that would have been, like, the normal thing. And she's like, no, I don't want you to assist me. And so Joan was like, well, it's my job. So Joan stayed in the hallway all waiting for Catherine to come out of the bathroom and fell asleep in the hallway and woke up at like 3 a.m. and was like, my lady, are you okay? And Catherine was like, go to bed. Blah. And she was just like, what is happening? And that's just, it just shows you that these people were not good at being sneaky.
And about halfway through her trip, all her ladies in waiting were suspicious. Mm-hmm. But bitches get stitches. So no one
snitches
was gonna
get stitches safe. Also. The saying.
Let me try that.
I mean, bitches might.
Bitches get stitched. Oh, wow. Okay, wait.
They might.
So about halfway through her trip, all her ladies in waiting were suspicious, but snitches get stitches. So no one was going to say or ask about anything until one of her ladies-in-waiting was helping her pack up her stuff to head back to London, and she saw Catherine just staring out the window lovingly. And when the lady-in-waiting looks out the window, she sees Thomas Culpepper staring lovingly back at the Queen.
The drama.
They gotta be more careful!
No, with Henry VIII walking around, bitches...
Henry VIII just was, like, such a minor character in this story.
I know.
That lady-in-waiting, later when she was interrogated, she said of this event, she said, I saw her looking at him in such a way that I thought there was love between them. Which I'm just like, sweet baby child, be more careful. What are you
doing? Right.
But she was so in love that she just, I mean, love makes you do dumb things. But I do also kind of feel like, when the stakes are that high. But also, she was so young that she needed someone better in her corner than... Because the only person that's helping her is Jane Seymour. Or Jane Seymour, Jesus Christ. Jane Boleyn. And that woman was the Hot Mess Express as well.
Yeah. So, okay. Let's take a quick second and fast forward. They're back in London. And maybe let's give a heads up here, because everything from here on out is messy, Messalina. The timeline is Messalina messy. There's a whole lot of characters that are Messalina messy. There's a whole lot of moving pieces here, guys. Yeah. So we're going to try to keep this as cohesive as possible, but you've been warned.
So Catherine Howard is at like her peak popularity because she crushed this royal progress. No notes, no crumbs. She ate it. However, our girl has reasons to be anxious now that she's back at home. And we know she struggles with managing her anxiety. That's like a huge part of her personality.
First off, it's a lot harder for her to see her ex-boo thing back
home. Current boo thing, like, yeah.
Yeah, current boo thing. And Jane Boleyn is a lot more hesitant to help her now because she's like, girl, that road trip, that was a thing. It was just a fling. It's too dangerous here. But she also couldn't say no when the queen, you know, to the queen when Catherine was just so in love.
Well, because I get where Jane Seymour's coming from, because, like, in these castles that the royal court doesn't have, like, it's a castle that probably nobody in their group of people that traveled there have ever been to before. So they don't know that this one room has back stairs, you know? They don't know about the stairway to heaven.
The back door stairway.
The back door stairway. But at Hampton Court Palace, at Greenwich Palace, people know all the secret passageways. They know. So it's just like, girlfriend, no, that was a road trip fling. What are you doing, you know? Mm-hmm. And then another reason to be anxious, this fucking guy. This Ugh. Fucking guy. Problematic ex, Francis Darham. What was it in the last episode that the writer said that he had, like, the emotional stability of a toddler or something?
Yeah. Ouch.
When they get back from Progress, he's like, I want a better job. I want more responsibilities in the inner circle. I just want a better job. We have no idea what his job was before. And so she's like, fine, because she just wants it to go away. So she gives him, like, I think he's like a groom of the chamber. I don't fucking know. She gives him a job where he has a bit more visibility at royal court now. But you remember how he's a fucking idiot? So...
Yeah, so Durham starts bragging to everyone who will listen about how much the queen loves him. You know, he's like, I've known the queen longer than any of y'all. Her family loves me. They owe me for keeping their secrets. Okay.
Dude, what the fuck?
What? And Catherine couldn't do anything to stop him from running that fat-ass mouth. People are whispering, like, okay, what secrets is he talking about? Who is this guy?
Who is this guy? I hate this man so much. So we need to switch gears a little bit. This is part of it where I'm like, new characters, a little bit messy. We're going to make this as cohesive as possible for you, though. So we need to switch gears a little bit. We're going to meet another character. So there's this dude named Thomas Cranmer. If you're into Tudor history, you already know who this is. He is a very, very high-ranking dude at court. He was a holy man, very into the Reformation. So he's like not Catholic, not Protestant, but yeah. But it's one of Henry's favorite dudes. And it's also worth noting, since he was into the Reformation and Protestant leaning, the Howard family was a little bit old school. So they were into like Catholic leanings. So some people do have the argument that Thomas Cranmer, wanted to see Catherine Howard's downfall because he was Protestant and they were Catholic. It's a rabbit hole. We just don't have time for.
Yeah.
Just keep that in mind also if you want to put on your tinfoil hat.
Yeah. So one day there was this dude named John that he knew that was like, hey, I really need to talk to you. And Cranmer's like, hey, what's up? And this John guy's like, I don't really know how to say this, but my sister told me something that I feel like I have to tell someone about.
Yeah, so this guy, John's sister, is a woman named Mary. And Mary used to work at the house of the Dowager Duchess of Norfolk, so where Catherine grew up. And Mary was looking for a job, and John was like, why don't you just go work for the queen? I've heard she's hired several people that used to work at the Dowager Duchess's house. Just go work for the queen. I know Thomas Cranmer. I can get you in. And Mary was like, no, I'm not doing it. Hard no.
And John is like, okay, that's weird.
Suspicious.
Why not? Like, why not? And Mary said something to the effect of, oh, that poor girl was not raised right. She has no morals. And then she goes into this story about Catherine's first boyfriend, Henry Mannix. And he had once bragged to Mary about seeing a birthmark that Catherine had somewhere in her nether regions, which Mary had seen that birthmark when she was changing her. So maybe it was on her butt or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Like maybe like her upper thigh. Somewhere that you wouldn't. I mean, this is the 16th century, and so women were so covered up that you wouldn't. It could have been just.
Yeah, it could have been her belly.
It could have been her shoulder. Yeah, but.
Yeah, right.
But still enough for this Mary chick to be like, this guy's bragging about sleeping with Catherine Howard, and then she sees the birthmark and she's like, fuck, I guess it's right, you know? Or not sleeping with, but like having an inappropriate.
Something's going on.
So then the John guy just presses his sister being like, what? Why? What are you talking about? And she just spills the beans. she's like, well, first she fucked around with her music teacher, and then she actually slept with this guy named Francis Darum. The way it sounds to me, it doesn't sound like Mary was obviously judging this person, judging Catherine a little bit, but it also sounds like it came from a place of pity, because just like, she was just like, that poor girl. But also, I don't want to work for her because she's a slut. But then, and it also, but like, she's kept this secret for so long. She could have used this information that she knew the day Catherine became queen to like get something, but it just, so what I'm getting at is I don't think that this woman in any way, shape or form hoped that she was setting off.
Was being malicious.
Yeah. I don't think she was I think she was just like, oh my God, I have the secret. Finally, let me tell you about it, you know?
And what do you think Cranmer did with this information? Because he can't not tell Henry. Yeah. But he also doesn't want to tell him because the king's in this stanky leg era.
Delicate health,
and,
yeah.
You know, chop, chop, chop head era. Mm-hmm. And he writes him a letter and leaves it for the king to find after church one day.
Because let's talk about that, though. Because let's say he decided to ignore this. And then Henry finds out some other way about these rumors. And then somebody's like, well, I told Thomas Cranmer, you know.
You're dunzos, brother.
So I get this guy because I don't know. I don't know enough about Thomas Cranmer to say one way or the other, but he seems like a kind of decent guy. But so I don't think he necessarily wanted the fall of this child bride. But it was sort of like, well, if I don't tell him and someone else does, it's my fucking head. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Thomas Cranmer ends up telling Henry, and to everyone's surprise, Henry laughs it off at first. He's like, no, this is dumb. Catherine? Really, Catherine? My precious little perfect piece of arm candy that everyone loves? You're saying she hooked up with two guys before she met me? No way. Don't believe it.
Fake news.
Why don't we go ahead and just like, why don't we just look into it a little bit? Right? At least there may be something to the rumor, so let's just look into
it. Yeah, he's like, I don't believe it, but let's just investigate just in case. But he didn't tell Catherine that he found the letter. Which I feel like probably most people agree with me. Your spouse is supposed to be your partner.
Yeah.
So if I heard a rumor about my husband, the first thing I would do is be like, hey, I heard this. What do you want to say about it? Do you know what I mean? So it's just like, he obviously did not view her as a partner, which I hate. So he didn't tell her. He said, I don't want to upset her, but it's like,
ugh. Dude, bro. And then Cranmer goes to Henry Mannix's house the next day, and he's married now, and maybe he has some kids, and he confesses everything.
I mean, if Henry's in like, his head like, chop era and Henry's dudes show up, you tell the truth.
Yeah, he's like, yep, totally had inappropriate relationships with her, but we never boned. We never went to bone zone.
We didn't bump butts.
And I swear to God, we haven't bumped butts. I haven't seen her in years. I haven't wrote her. I haven't tried to get in touch with her. Nothing. I'm not a fucking idiot like Francis Darum.
And they're like, why is Francis Darum a fucking idiot? What do you mean by that? And he's like, well, he used his relationship, his past relationship with Catherine Howard to get a job at court. Cranmer didn't know. And they're like,
oh gosh.
What?
Well,
I mean, Catherine had...
this is like the...
Catherine had 100 people or more in her staff. So, like, they didn't know every single person, and she had given Francis Darum a really low job. So Cranmer's like, let me get this right. Before I go back to Hampton Court Palace and process all this, let me get this right. The queen's ex-boyfriend, who she has actually slept with, works for her? And Mannix was like,
yeah.
Mannix was like, I thought you knew. Like,
And then, but Mannix is really smart to sing like a bird, sing like a canary, because he shared so many details and was so honest that they believed him. And luckily for him, he was kind of left alone after this. And this is the last that we hear from him. He had no punishment, no chop chop era.
They were like, you were honest with us. You never actually slept with her. We see you have wife and kids now, and you gave us such a juicy lead. They basically forgot he existed. Which, you know what? Good for him. I mean, not good. I don't think he's a good guy because he was fucking around with a teenager, fucking around with a child. But you know what? He didn't get his head cut off. What a luxury it is to just die in obscurity back in this day.
Yeah. Everybody's like, okay, you're fine, Mr. Mannix, but we gotta find this Durham guy. So they questioned Durham the next day, and guess what? He also spilled the beans. He said, yep, I knew the queen carnally lots and lots of times. But, you know, she wasn't queen at the time. Like, they weren't married. So what difference does it make?
And premarital sex was not an executionable offense back then. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Darum is detained, but quietly. because no one wanted Catherine to know what was happening, which is so fucked up. So they questioned everyone at court that knew Catherine before she was queen. And that was about like 9 or 10 people or something. And all of them told the same story. And they specifically, purposely, questioned them all separately. But they were like, all these people are coming back with the exact same story. We don't think they're lying, you know?
Yeah. And on November 6, 1541, Cranmer and his team bring this story to the king. Like, we're so sorry to tell you that we absolutely have no doubt in our minds that Catherine had two boyfriends before she knew you. And one of them, she went to Bone Zone, bumping butts all the way May.
Stairway to heaven. And she's stairway to heaven.
Stairway, back door, stairway to heaven. It's even worse, ladies and gentlemen. And that dude lives here at court because she hired him to work for her.
It's not a good look. They say that Henry wept like a baby. Which, I have two things to say about this. One, okay, dude, you know what? You weren't a virgin when you married her either. What kind of fragile dick energy is that? That it's like, my wife, new other guy. Like, okay.
So did you.
Okay, buddy. The other thing I want to say that I think is interesting that also proves that the Anne Boleyn thing was a fucking joke is that there's this story that's been written down of Henry VIII's genuine reaction when he found out that his wife had slept with other people before and he wept. There's nothing even kind of like that Anne Boleyn, because it was all fucking made up. And that's all I have to say about that.
Katie feels some kind of way about Anne Boleyn.
Spoiler alert.
Surprise, welcome to the Queen's podcast.
So they decide, they're like, we're going to keep Catherine in her rooms. She can't go anywhere now. Yeah.
And she's confined to her rooms, but not told why. So we know our girl had some anxiety problems, so she's anxious as hell.
Wouldn't you be?
And yeah, like, they kept her in a room for 2 weeks. I've been in quarantine for one, and I'm already going crazy. And I know why I'm in quarantine.
Exactly.
She didn't. And it's 2 weeks. So you'd be crazy not to be anxious.
I would be throwing up with my anxiety. I just imagine it, like, because when I'm anxious, I feel like my stomach is trying to eat itself. And I would just be like, oh, poor baby. Cranmer went to question her grandmother, her step-grandmother, the Dowager Duchess. He told the Dowager Duchess, like, hey, Henry is going to divorce Catherine. And Agnes, the Dowager Duchess, was like, okay, are y'all going to send her back here? Are y'all going to send her to a nunnery? What are the next steps? And he said, we don't know yet. But Agnes was like, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and prepare some rooms for her in case she gets sent back here.
And notice how at this point, there's no talk about the death penalty. Mm-hmm. Because everyone thinks it's sketchy as shit that she hired her ex, but no one is accusing her of cheating on the king. Until they did.
Until they did. All right, shit's about to get real, real. I'm probably going to cry. So I'm going to have to take a break and top off my drink. We will be right back.
I suggest you do too.
Rules.
Everybody, shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
Thing done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
Hello, everyone. Stakuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.
We're back. I say that with a question mark because it's not going to get pretty,
no,
guys.
Nothing gets more fun.
Yeah. Finally, Thomas Cranmer goes to Catherine and tells her what's going on. So there's this story that when he told her, she broke free from her room, ran down the halls of Hampton Court Palace, trying to find Henry to beg him to talk to her. In fact, people say that they see her ghost still doing this. Okay, we have no idea if this is true or not, but this is totally going to be a Patreon episode.
I think that would be a lot of fun, like the ghost, yeah. Especially because it's spooky season now.
Yes, ghost. The ghost of Hampton Court.
Rules. But what we do know is Cranmer was like, we need you to give an official confession. And she does, in which she admits that she did have sex with Darum. And then she is officially stripped of her title as queen. But again, we just, at this point, we have no idea what their plans for her were. Again, they were not talking about executing her. It was, is she going to go to an abbey? Is she going to live in the Tower of London for the rest of her life? Like, we don't know, but no one's talking execution.
Until it was decided that they should just have some casual torture.
Do a little bit of torture.
On Francis Durham, yeah. You know.
He's not from a noble family. If you're from a noble family, you don't get tortured. He's from a plain Jane family, so like, but may as well torture him. Could be fun.
Yeah, let's see if he left anything out. Yeah, and that's when he said, no, she didn't want to sleep with me any more than she wants to sleep with Thomas Culpepper.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, excuse me, what? And he's like, yeah, just ask Lady Rochford.
Yeah, they were like, Thomas Culpepper, the king's like favorite little guy, what? And so they go to Jane Boleyn, they go to Lady Rochford, and she folds like a house of cards, which is so fucked up because at the, like, when this all started going down, Lady Rochford had told Catherine, they are gonna have to tie me up to wild horses to get me to tell them anything. There were no wild horses. There was just literally
Liza Minnelli.
But yeah, she folds like a house of cards. She's like telling them dates. She's telling them places. She's like, yeah, I let them hook up here. I let them hook up here. I stood watch on the back door stairway to heaven. Like, yes, 100%. She just sang like a bird.
And she even's like, yep, they had sex in my room, yeah, while on royal progress. And in the meantime, though, they still aren't talking execution. Catherine has moved to an abbey. She never sees any of these men again, and she doesn't realize that anyone even knows about this affair that she had with Culpepper.
Yeah.
Which, again, despite if you believed that they were actually sleeping together, she was at least having an emotional affair.
Right, right. Again, Catherine is in such a horrible mental state that they remove anything from her rooms at the Abbey that they think she could hurt herself with. Because they are just like, this bitch is not well. Which, ugh, poor baby.
Yeah, speaking of losing your mind, Jane Boleyn has completely lost touch with reality.
Yeah.
Like, back in the day, they would have said that she went mad, and it's debated if she was faking it or not, because back then there was a law that you couldn't execute a mad person. In fact, I think that's still a law today.
Is it?
Yeah, like, I think...
Oh, I guess that's why people always plead insanity. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So Henry VIII was like, well, let's get her better doctors, get her the best care that we can get so that I can have her executed.
He sent his own personal doctor to care for her.
Wow.
So that she could then get better and get executed. Cool guy.
What a
cool
douche.
Guy. Ugh. He then, when it seems like she's not getting better, which there's actually, people wonder if she was actually quote unquote mad or if she was faking it because she knew about this law. But then after a minute when she's not getting better immediately, he actually creates a new law. That is like, you know what? Actually, you can execute the mentally insane. LOL. What a fun time. Everyone at, yeah, fun and sexy time. Everyone at court was questioned, and all of Catherine's ladies-in-waiting were like, I never saw anything inappropriate happen, but I suspect. Remember the glance, the I saw love in between them? They were like, I suspected there was something going on there.
Yeah, and Catherine has been at the Abbey for a couple of weeks, and Cranmer and her uncle, the Duke of Norfolk, show up and are like, Hey, so just spill the beans. Tell us about this relationship with Thomas Culpepper. And my heart just drops imagining myself in her place. Like, they had found the letter she had wrote to him when he was sick. So she was like, oh, God, the jig is up.
To the day of their deaths, neither Catherine nor Culpepper ever admit to actually having sex with each other. But they admit to an emotional affair, like we talked about earlier. And Thomas said that he hoped that one day he'd sleep with her. The people told her that whenever he said that, the questioners told him that is already a crime to, like, think about one day sleeping with her.
They're getting the emotional, it's like thought cheating. Police. Like, this is what this is. Yes, it's like the thought police, the emotional cheating. So Thomas Culpepper and Francis Durham were put on trial and executed on December 10th of 1541. So that's how fast all this moved.
Yeah.
This started on November 6th, and a little over a month later, her two exes were dead.
Oh my God.
Thomas Culpepper, beheaded. So he's lucky. Durham was hung and drawn and quartered. So, not so lucky. I mean, I feel bad for him. Because, oh my God, what a horrible way to go. But also, I can't feel sorry for this guy because it's this fucking guy.
He's such an idiot. God damn it.
Yeah.
If you don't know what hung, drawn, and quartered is, we're not going to explain it to you here. But you can Google it. Or not. God damn it. What a horrible fucking way to go. But yeah, but he also, why even ask for a anyway, I'm gonna have to move on, otherwise it's just gonna be me yelling about this guy for a while. So I think it is so fucked up that Henry just completely removed himself from the talk of what do we do with Catherine Howard when it comes to public. I'm sure he was still pulling the strings in the background. Again, we talked about in the last episode, Henry VIII only has so many moves and he just does them over and over, because he did the same thing with the Anne Boleyn trial. He just completely removed himself from public view, even though he was pulling the strings in the background. But unlike Anne Boleyn, Catherine Howard didn't have a trial. It's unclear if she elected to not have a trial or if she was not given an option to have a trial. I kind of feel like she saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah, she knew it was gonna happen. So yeah, this breaks my heart, because at the Abbey, one of the women who was attending on her overheard her praying out loud, and she asked God to grant her one favor: for her execution to not be public.
I hate it here.
This is not a fun time.
It's not a fun time. 14 members of her family and their staff were put into the Tower of London, and everyone assumed were also going to be executed. One of those was the Dowager Duchess, her step-grandmother, but they hadn't broken any laws. So people in the court were like, okay, you do you, but what are they being held for? And so Henry VIII created a brand new law that said that it is illegal to withhold information that you know about someone that the King of England is thinking about marrying, which is so specific.
Yeah. And eventually all those people were let go, but damn. Fuck. I bet the Dowager Duchess was like, shit in her fancy panties.
Oh, for sure. So the day that new law was passed, Henry actually threw a big party. LOL, I'm single and I'm going to kill all these Howard people. I don't know. But it's said that he was flirting with all the women at this party after all of Catherine's family was thrown into jail so hard that it was obvious that he was, like, scouting out his next wife. And if he was thinking about Catherine at all. I feel like he did that on purpose. I think he was probably thinking about Catherine hard, but he didn't want it.
It was a distraction.
It was like, you know, magicians when they're like doing a trick. It's like, look over there. And then they, you know, so yeah, it was a distraction. Yeah, exactly.
So now it's early February 1542 and Catherine is manic as hell. Like, the staff at the Abbey are like, one day she's bossing everyone around. The next day she's like insisting on getting dressed up and pretending like nothing happened. But most days, she just cries and cries and cries and cries.
Poor fucking baby. on February 10th, a group of people arrive and they're like, we're going to take you by barge, which is boat, I think, through the River Thames. Mm-hmm. We're going to take you by barge to the Tower of London. And it gets very real for Catherine at this point. She is like, nope, I'm not going. I'm not fucking going. And they're like, you have to fucking go. You know, like she, I know. She was just like, heels in the ground. I'm not fucking going. I don't blame the people that did this because I'm sure they tried their fucking hardest to rationalize. Is that? To talk to her in a rational manner. But eventually they just had to pick her up and throw her in the boat. They had to manhandle her. They were like,
oh my God.
No one's in an ideal situation. You know?
So once in the tower, she's informed that she will be executed publicly 3 days later, along with her former friend, Jane Boleyn. And Catherine gives her last confession in which she said, I take God and his angels to be my witness that I am guiltless of the act of defiling the sovereign's bed.
Okay, back then, they really believed if you lied in your last confession, if you went to your grave without telling the truth, that your afterlife is fucked. So, what do we think? Do you think her and Thomas Culpepper slept together after she'd married the king? I go back and forth so hard.
I don't think so. I really don't. I think that it was an emotional affair. It was.
I mean, yeah, it was definitely an affair. She saw... in that, like, I mean, if I found out that my husband was in love with somebody else, even if they've never slept together, I would still consider it an affair. So it was still an affair. But did he put his penis in her vagina?
I don't think so. Because, again, I think it's Catherine saw Anne Boleyn's story and was like, she didn't even do it. Why would I even put myself in that circumstance? I just don't
but
see
when you're,
her.
Like, when you're young and in looking. Love.
I
know. I don't.
Maybe. Maybe.
I kind of feel like because both of them went to their grave saying we never had sex with each other. And because Thomas Culpepper, completely knowing that thinking about after the death of the king was still considered treason and admitted to that, I kind of feel like once he had already admitted that, if they had actually slept together, he would have admitted that as well. I don't know.
Maybe.
Is my opinion. So the way I feel about this is,
it's not a... Yeah, there's no pretty way out of this situation.
No. This part really makes me want to cry. I'm going to try really hard not to, and hopefully I won't. But she asked for the block. She had a really random request. No, the jailers were like, I don't think anyone's ever asked for this before. She asked for the block that she would lay her head down on. And this is another thing that's different with Anne Boleyn. Anne Boleyn got a special execution because they called in for French swordsman, you know?
The best executioner ever, yeah.
And Anne Boleyn was her on the stage by herself. They're like, no, we're going to execute Catherine Howard at the same stage that we execute Jane Boleyn on. And no, we're just going to do a regular axe. So she calls for the block and they bring it to her because she wants to practice exactly where to put her head. Because our baby girl, what's the most consistent thing about her, Nathan?
She wants to look perfect in everybody's eyes. She wants to be the model of how things should be done.
She has never once.
Even though they're not done in the right way. Oh.
In her entire life, she has never once publicly looked like a fool. And she didn't want to start now at her execution. And, Nathan, I can't. I fucking can't. That is the most tragic fucking thing.
Where do you think Henry was in all of this? Like, where do you think her man is supposed to be? Oh, yeah, that's right. He's planning a party. Because it's Valentine's Day party, yeah. February 14th, was later that week, and he's going to throw a huge
it was the day after.
Party.
The day
after. How disgusting.
I googled Henry VIII Valentine's Day party. This doesn't seem like something he did every year. His wife was executed on the 13th, and he threw a party on the 14th. To me, that feels deliberate. A party about yes. love. A Valentine's Day party.
Creepy, creepy. I am feeling mad.
I'm feeling mad, too! So on February 13th, 1542, Catherine Howard and Jane Boleyn were brought to the scaffold. We don't know exactly what Catherine said, because they usually let the person that's being executed give a speech.
Have a last statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. She almost fainted trying to climb the steps of the scaffolding, so...
Relatable.
People had to, like, help her up. Yeah, I know. And there's this awful rumor that, not true, at her execution, she apparently said to the crowd, "I die a queen when I'd rather die the wife of a Culpepper." No, that's just like, let them eat cake.
No.
Bullshit.
She never said that. Because also, you being chill about getting executed, you don't want to give the guy that's about to cut off your head a reason to botch it up. So if she said that, that would give them a reason to botch it up. So she didn't say that.
But then she laid her head exactly where she had practiced. And that is the end of the short life of Catherine Howard.
Bless her heart. Fun fact. During the reign of Mary, her stepdaughter that hated her so much, Mary I actually posthumously pardoned anybody that was executed without trial, because so many Catholics were executed without trial during the reign of her father and her brother. So when she came, she was like, let's pardon anybody that was executed without trial. So Mary unintentionally pardoned Catherine Howard.
And over the centuries, there have been debates over Catherine. Was she this dirty, slut-ass, bitch-ass whore? Or was she just 1,000% a victim? It's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
It's way more
just like any real person,
that.
You have more layers than that. You're more complicated than that, yeah.
And as depressing as this was, I'm glad that we actually took the time and we get to know her a little bit better.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the end of our Catherine Howard series. I wish we had better news.
But we don't, so cheers.
We'll catch y'all next time. Cheers, bitches.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit caneighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.